Today we have Martin Greiner from Pittsburgh, who's going to tell us about a fractional insulator protected by topological oil.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, Oleg, for introducing me. So what I tell you today is mostly about an unpublished work by myself and two former students, one Vera Schnells, who graduated this year, and one Ronny Tomale, who graduated 10 years ago, and is also one of the organizers of this workshop. So there's a forthcoming paper. I don't know whether it will bear this title, because the title is somewhat misleading. But I just, I'll tell you why I choose this title so far and why I can't come up with a better title. And some of it is in a published paper, Method to Identify Parent Hamiltonians for Trial States. And this is something useful to all of you, even if you don't care about fractional topological insulators and about fractional phases, there's a general method, you know, which has been very useful to me, and you know, which I'm going to explain to you because we need it here. So, you know, why fraction? Now, you know, in different circumstances, the title could have been a fractional topological insulator. Except that the concept of a fractional topological insulator has already been introduced, and most of you, if I ask you, you would know what it is. And what I talk about it is not what it is. It's fractional, it's topological, it's an insulator, but it's not what's known as a fractional topological insulator. Let me explain. First, I would like to make one remark about insulators as such, and that is probably you all know about a Chern insulator. A Nobel Prize has been given for Haldane's paper, and I use the concept of Chern insulator and integer quantum Hall effect, or fractional Chern insulator and fractional quantum Hall effect interchangeably. And I would like to justify this briefly. So the usual view is that, so let me write that here.
Yeah, it might help if you write just a little bit in larger fonts.
Larger? Okay, maybe
we're visually challenged.
Okay, so the usual view is that a Chern insulator is now good. Is this big enough? Okay, a Chern insulator, you know, Haldane's paper was entitled, it's like integer quantum Hall effect. Without a magnetic field. And you know, the view I take here, here, that the same thing is really an integer quantum Hall effect on a lattice. And a lattice commensurate with a magnetic field. And you know, to make that a little bit more specific, what Haldane had in his paper, he considered a hexagonal lattice in real space, and you know, also in real space. And then he said, you know, he introduced, so like graphene, and introduced some next nearest neighbor hoppings which have some phase. So there's some phase e to the I phi associated with this hopping, and you know, I put them all around, like here and here and further more. And you know, and then he says, okay, you know, here in the center he puts flux minus 3 phi, and then you know, he has effectively no magnetic field. Now I could argue, you know, if I choose my magnetic field such that, I can always add 2 pi to the flux. So, and if I say I don't have here -3 phi, but 2 pi -3 phi, I can adjust phi such that I have a uniform magnetic field. Now you might think there's only a special value for that. This area is 3 times this, so this would be 2 pi divided by 6, and then this would be pi here. But if you go to other values for the phase where the model works just as well, I can still say I have a uniform magnetic field. And I just adjust the hoppings. For example, if I make the phase smaller, that there's less space. So my punchline here is, all what a churn insulator is really an integer quantum Hall effect on a projected onto a lattice, which is commensurate with the magnetic field. And then of course it was much better to publish in PIL, to say without a magnetic field than, projected to a magnetic field. And of course, there's also another view that you have two, in Haldane's papers, that you have 2 Dirac cones and you change the mass and you make them massive, and in 1 Dirac cone you change the sign of the mass, and then on the boundary you get an edge state. But changing the mass in 1 Dirac cone and then getting an edge mode is just, the familiar story of the Chakiv-Rebbe soliton. You can look at it, at Haldane's paper, 2 ways. You can say, he rediscovered the Chakiv-Rebbe soliton, nothing new. Oh, he projected an integer quantum Hall effect onto the lattice, nothing new. But I think it's still a very great paper because, to most people, including myself, I certainly was not aware of that the Chakiv-Rebbe soliton had anything to do with the integer quantum Hall effect. So, sometimes, this is important for me only because I use the expressions interchangeable for churn insulator and integer quantum Hall effect for everything I do here, and of course also fractional churn insulator and fractional quantum Hall effect. Now, you're familiar with the concept of a topological insulator, and in my language, what I say, all what it is that is an integer quantum Hall effect plus its time reversal conjugate, which I just denote by putting a bar on it. And, then you get edge states which are protected by time reversal symmetry. Protected. Oh, I'm getting smaller again. By T. And then the story of the fractional topological insulator, I'll make it a little bit topological insulator, is basically you take a fractional quantum Hall effect or fractional churn insulator plus its time reversal conjugate and play exactly the same game. Now, this is all fine. You can do that. It's very hard to realize because, in a fractional churn insulator, you would need really flat bands compared to the interaction, and that's hard to realize. But what it is, and then also protected by time reversal, you have 2 conceptual steps here. So one is that you take a state, a churn insulator, and its time reversal conjugate. The other concept is that you go from the integer to the fractional, and for this step, this is of course known. This step is known, and for this a Nobel Prize has been given. For this a Nobel Prize has been given. For this one, a Nobel Prize is maybe coming up. But here, what you do to arrive at the fractional quantum, or the fractional topological insulator, there's no new concept. You take 2 concepts and you say, okay, I have that and that, but there's nothing There's nothing, these states are not entangled. The fractionalization happens here and happens here, and it happens here exactly as, you know, this wasn't there. So, you know, then it's a question, can we, you know, now that we know about both these, can we combine them in some non-trivial way where these states get entangled? And, you know, I'm of course not the first one to think along those lines. Many people have, and many people, and, you know, as far as I know, all of them gave up on it. And literally, you know, to some extent, I also have given up on it, but not quite. The thing is, it seems that if you take a state with topological order and you want it to be time reversal, there is no way to entangle them. I don't know whether, you know, there's certainly no theorem saying that, but no one has tried, and, you know, it never, you know, everyone who tried it never worked. So, you know, and here's what, so this is a challenge, and what I do will probably shock you at first, because the first thing I do is I say, okay, you know, I want them entangled and I want a state, and, you know, I don't care about anything. So, you know, to hell with time reversal symmetry, and I do it anyway. Now, you know, this sounds stupid, and that's why no one else has tried. But, you know, I hope to convince you that it's not so ridiculous. It's not nearly as ridiculous as you may think. And, you know, so the state I propose, or, you know, we propose, I write down as a wave function. And, you know, I write first down the wave function. Now, you know, I do it in steps. I have coordinates, in I write it as a quantum Hall wave function, where I have coordinates C and W, and these are the up spins and these are the down spins. And, you know, to follow my talk further, you need some familiarity with quantum Hall physics. I think most of you have it, and, you know, if you don't have any, you know, we can talk in private about it. So the first thing I'm going to do here, I'm writing the wave function in several steps. First thing I write is, with this M, for the up spins, I write a Laughlin state. So, you know, I have here I equals 1 to N up. Yeah, so there's some exponential factor, you know, magnetic length set to 1. I squared. And, you know, now I leave some space, quite a bit of space. And to write a Laughlin state, Ci minus Cj to the M up. So, you know, if M up equals 3, as we will take it, this is just a Laughlin state, you know, for the up spins. Nothing wrong with that, right? You can follow me. So now, you know, for the down spins, I also write a Laughlin state. And I call these, and I have here W bar, which means, you know, I take complex conjugates, the magnetic field goes in the other direction. I'm still inspired to, I want roughly something like this. So, you know, now I do N down e to the minus 1/4 WK squared. And, you know, put another Laughlin factor here. But now I call, you know, I label my coordinates by, so this is again an up. Where did I put the error? Here. An up. This is again, this is now n down. Wk bar minus wl bar. And down. Now, if M up and M down are equal, I just have a fractional topological insulator. You know, I have a fractional quantum Hall effect, and it's time reversal conjugate. Right? And now what I do is to entangle the two states, and I just didn't leave enough space. I take a product over all K. I take a, so K to N down, I to N up, and take WK down minus 2D, or I write it out, it's better because it's not so good readable. Anyway, d by dc I to power n. Now, this term, of course, breaks time reversal symmetry, right? Because now I treat them differently. Now, let's look. You know, in quantum Hall, you often think about flux attachments, and, you know, it's sort of this composite fermion picture is extremely popular because you don't, you know, you can sort of still get a grasp on it without really diving into it. So let's see what we have. So we have the upspin layer and we have the downspin layer. And, you know, let's now assume n. Let's assume these three numbers are 3, 1, 1. And, you know, everything in this talk, I will take now these numbers. You can take different numbers, but, you know, these numbers are good enough to illustrate the concept. So what happens for the upspins, you know, you have m up equals 3. So you can say, okay, you know, I have the C, so the magnetic field, you know, will go in the up direction. And, you know, I have like three flux. You can view it as three flux quanta or three zeros as attached to each electron. And, you know, let's put another one here. Right. Now, for the downspins, we have only one attached and set in the other direction. So, you know, let me put a downspin here. And, you know, there's one flux going, and, you know, I may put another one, maybe here. And then let's see what this factor does. Now, if I view the W as a constant, this is just a quasi-electron excitation in this fluid. So it basically, you know, this derivative takes a zero out. This is putting a flux tube in the opposite direction, makes a quasi-electron, you know, and what it de facto does, it takes a zero, it takes one zero from a bunch of electrons nearby. So let's do that in color. So what? And that happens exactly at the locations of the W's. So so what I have here, what this factor does for me is, it introduces flux which goes in the opposite direction here for the C and in the same direction here.
Okay, could you explain again the partial derivative ddz? Should I think of it as a momentum conjugate to the Z? And if so, how do I see that it's equivalent to a flux in opposite direction?
Well, this is quantum Hall physics. I mean, it's, you know, it's the thing is when you put like okay, let's step a little. I guess we have time to do a bit of quantum Hall physics. I mean, this is at Laughlin's 83 paper, you know, it's from day one of quantum Hall.
I realize this is my ignorance, but there is
it won't take a lot of time to talk about it. So what you have is when you have a Laughlin state, let me write it here. So, you know, and I'm going to erase it later. So, for example, you have a Laughlin state, then you can make, so I smaller j, and, you know, I don't write much more here, you can make a quasi hole, you make ci minus xi, and, you know, this is at some position, so you take a product over I, you two set at some position psi. What happens is, my favorite way of looking at this is that wherever you have an electron, you have two more zeros, so you have three, you know, so if you take one test electron, C1, and look for zeros of this function, that's right. So this is just a Laughlin state. You know, I omitted the exponential, but you're not interested in that. So you can go around and, you know, send wherever there are electrons, you know, you have one zero, just anti-symmetry in the lowest Landau level dictates that you have one zero where the particle coordinates are, and you have two more attached. And in the Laughlin wave functions, their position coincide. And if you have a general Hamiltonian, like Coulomb interactions, the positions do not coincide, but you know they're still attached. The closer you go to the ideal Laughlin state, the closer they are bound. And when you put a zero in here, then you have a quasi hole, because you can think about it this way. If you do this to a power 3 here, then you would have put three extra zero in, and the fluid would screen that as there were an electron, but there is none. So this thing has, with the 3 in red, has charge plus 1, you know, when the electron has minus 1. Because you have the positively neutralizing background. And now if I take the 3 off here and make it into a 1, then, you know, I take these 3 zeros apart, I have a charge 1/3. And that's the story how you get the fractional charge. Now, the antiparticle forces is if you take out a zero. And the way Laughlin suggested to take out a zero is sort of, you know, I do it here. You have, you have sort of some region, and you take this one derivative, you take a zero out, and there's one missing. And, you know, usually when you look at such a wave function and look at the zeros numerically, you know, there are always 2 electrons somewhere nearby. It's never just taken out of one. And, you know, and the mathematical concept for it is this derivative.
Can I ask you another question? So sorry, I don't want to sharp it up, but in principle, you can view this like a multi-component system. It doesn't have to be spin. And they can write all kinds of wave functions, but
yes.
It doesn't mean that they're stable ground state of anything. So
yes.
Was the goal here just to play around with possible wave functions or to find...
No. Look, now, I have a little bit of conflict, you know. Because I would have told you the goal already if Andre hadn't interrupted me. So, you know,
sorry.
I would have told you already if Andre hadn't interrupted me. You know, I'm interrupted, and you say, why don't you get to the point?
Okay.
So, you know, I'm glad to explain, but your question is absolutely justified, you know. But, you know, you caught me in the middle, and, you know,
no,
I have
okay,
to stop. And yeah, you know, that's it. What can I do? I mean, so okay. So,
sir,
you can answer. Yeah, I will answer. Okay. So why is this wave function? And now let's look at the filling factor of it. And you know, filling factor is defined. You know, we can look, for example. So filling factor 1/nu is defined to be dn phi, the number of flux quanta of 0 divided by dn. And you know, as you see from this picture already, what we have is, since we have, well, let's assume we have as many electrons in both layers or both spins, but I refer to them as layers here, then we have 2 zeros per electron here and 2 zeros per electron here. So nu up equals nu down equals 1/2. Right? Well, should I do some algebra? You believe me. Victor doesn't, but most people probably do. But it's easy, you know, you just, you know, this one takes 1/0 away, so you have m minus 1. I can do it on the blackboard, but, you know, so the filling factor for both layers, the electron filling factor, if you have a magnetic field, is the same. And the whole thing is an abelian quantum Hall state. Now, when you have an abelian quantum Hall state with a certain filling factor, those of you familiar with quantum Hall will know, you know, you have that determines, you know, what your edge states are, and that determines what your quasi, what's the charge of the quasi holes and quasi electrons. To illustrate that point, you know, I'll write now down the effective field theory of that point. So Now, I think I tell you what it's about before I write the effective field theory. So the point here is that even though time reversal symmetry is broken, it's only broken on the level of the topological order. Locally, I cannot tell that time reversal is broken because it's a quantum Hall state. It will have, you know, here it will, the quasi Halls will have charge 1/2 here and charge 1/2 here. And when I have edge states, you know, this one will have edge states with up spins going in this direction and the other up states with spin down in this direction. And the edge states locally will be time conjugates of each other. So, you know, I break time reversal symmetry on a non-local level, on the level of topological order. And to see time reversal violation, I need to do a non-local experiment. But backscattering for edge state is not a non-local experiment. So, you know, I have broken time reversal, and I still have. I've write it down. Edge states protected by T. You see?
Sorry, but let's say if you just start with this unentangled feeling factor like this, don't entangle anything, just write two kind of product states.
Yes.
Is it adiabatically connected to this or no?
No. This, if you just write that, you know, you haven't broken time reversal and you haven't entangled it. You know, you cannot I doubt you can adiabatically entangle it. And, you know, then if for filling factor 1/2 in each layer, you know, you can't write it as a Laughlin state. You would need, for example, a Pfaffian state, which has very different topological order and cannot be connected. So it is really, you know, there aren't too many really new quantum Hall states. There's a Laughlin state, then there's an extension of the hierarchy, then there's a Pfaffian state and the extension to the Moritz series. And, you know, and of course, you know, you can always take particle Hall conjugates, but there isn't anything more which has been written down. You know, this thing, you know, I'm not claiming it's perfectly useful. It's, you know, it may be perfectly useless in the end. I don't claim, you know, there's great use, even though I get back to your questions and have transparencies. But it is a fundamentally conceptually new quantum Hall state. Okay, now a few more details here. Let's see, what did I want to do? So I show you the effective field theory because there you know, it's sort of a, it may be something more for the experts, so don't worry too much if you if you're not familiar with it. Because, you know, in quantum Halls, the wave function says everything, but so does the effective field theory. So, you know, for quantum Hall state, you have these Lagrangians introduced by Wren. And here I can never remember the signs of the coefficients. E mu nu rho, A mu. And these small a are gauge fields, fictitious gauge fields which don't have a dynamics. They're Chern-Simons gauge fields. And here I write a matrix Chern-Simons term, a nu, a mu, no, a rho, minus 1 over 2 pi, epsilon mu. A mu t q, so q is also a vector, v mu a rho. So q is the coupling of the, you know, here we will have a 2x2 matrix because we have two layers. And q will be the charge coupling to the electromagnetic gauge field. So this is the E. No, sorry. I don't want the vector here. This is the index. Of course, it's a vector field, but this is this index. This vector arrow refers to the matrix structure of this. And then there's another term, plus E mu transpose L J quasi-particle. And you know what we have, what we have here is k equals 3 minus 1 minus 1 minus 1. I can say a few words about that. Q equals 1 minus 1. And well, L is sort of the vector, you know, what kind of excitations we consider. So here we have L up and L down. And if we make a quasi hole, for example, or electron, I have to see. I can never remember these things. You know, we have 1, 0 to make it in one layer, and 1 here and 0 here to make it in the other layer. And we can, of course, make combined objects. And here, this is because the charge is opposite coupling to the electromagnetic of the two layers coupling to the electromagnetic field. And this just is the wave function. Basically, you know, this is what we have in the one layer. This is what we have in the other layer. It's minus because the magnetic field. And, you know, it's a minus sign here because we have quasi electron, and it's the same sign here because this to this relative is quasi hole. And what we can do with it, then we can calculate, you know, and this is just like, you know, following the book, E squared over H. So sigma xy is Q transpose K to the minus 1 Q. And what we get here in for our case is 0, as we should get. You know, you can check that very easy. That means the matrix, so K to the minus 1 here is 1/4 1 minus 1 minus 3, 1. And then you plug that in and get that. And the quasi-particle Q quasi-particle particle, depending on, you know, what kind of quasi-particle you make, is then Q transpose K to the minus 1 L. And you know what it is here is what we find here, it's 1/2 for up spins, it's 1/2, and for down spins, it's also 1/2. Just have to plug in here 1, 0, and 0, 1. And you know, the interesting thing, you know, where I want to get on, which I don't see so easily on the wave function, but see very easily in the effective field theory, is the mutual quasi particle statistics, quasi hole, quasi electron statistics, is pi L transpose K to the minus 1 L. And this is minus, this is pi, for up spins, it's pi 1/4. And for down spins, it's minus 3 pi 1/4. So here we see, you know, they have different holes have different statistics in the different layers. But, you know, this is due to the topological order. Here we see the time reversal violation. But this is a non-trivial, yes, Ilya.
This is technical, but let me get back to this. So Laughlin wave function is a variational function for the problem that is well posed.
Yes.
This wave function, you're right, is... Pause.
Well, you know, it's a... No, it's an attempt that it's an attempt to be innovative, and I will show you that we can find, you know, I will get, you know, of course the question is, can any interaction stabilize it?
Exactly.
You know, I could have, you know, I'm sort of in some ways I'm ahead of Laughlin. Laughlin had an experiment and you know got some hints he needed the wave function.
So it's a theory in search of experiment.
It's a new concept, yes. If you want, so it's a theory. Well, you know, there could be an experiment, but, you know, it's, well, but, you know, in topological insulators, that's not so uncommon. You have a theoretical concept, and, you know, you send people to the lab and ask them. Now
there was no judgment attached to my question.
Okay.
I was just asking whether there is a way to look, I mean, how would I look for a system where this would be a good variational?
You're again ahead of me. Okay. So, you know, technical or not, the thing is, it's T is violated also only on the level. I want to write that down, because you know if you take notes, T is violated only at the level of topological. So, you know, you need to a non-local experiment to see it, and that's what the thing is. So, you know, the new concept is here that in order to have protected edge states, you don't need a global T invariance. It is enough if T is locally a good symmetry. That's my statement. So, you know, it is, you know, I'm you see, you know, so there is a new concept, and that's the way, you know, how it works. Now, of course, can you please?
So, for example, if I had an anti-ferromagnetic topological insulator, am I given this?
An anti-ferromagnetic topological insulator?
Yes, so you're saying you want T locally.
Well, no.
Fractional.
No, you know, I'm deep. I'm you know. Let's talk in private. You know, it has. If I talk now about antiferromagnets, you know, things come to mind, but they take me too far.
Okay.
You know, how feasible fractional topological insulators are, and so this is a question. Since these are all other questions. Now, I promised you, you know, sort of so there's what I told you so far is unpub.
Yeah. Question.
What the experiment is, so basically the phase from exchanging spin up and spin down have the same charge and they look like tandemversal, but when you exchange them, they have different phases.
Exactly. When you exchange up and up, and when you exchange up and down, and up and you know you can also calculate the up down exchange phase, but you know this is not my point.
Okay.
You know this is up and up. If I do quasi particle statistics, set this way, you know you can write the wave function down and could ask me now, does it really break time reversal symmetry? Because maybe you're just too dumb to see it. But you know, it's not that I'm too dumb to see it, because you know it's different.
And this cannot happen by some version of this FQH plus FQH bar. I mean, it seems tempting that I could, because it's a property of just up exchange and down exchange. It feels like I could do a bilayer which does this.
Well, but how do you get if the thing is time reversal, you know, if the whole thing is time reversal symmetric, you know, you do the up and you do a down, then, you know, what you do to the down should be just the time.
No, so let me start. So it's not FQH and FQH bar. Let's get FQH 1 and FQH 2. So I have two FQH layers.
Yeah.
Whose quasi-particle charges are the same, but the statistics are different, but they're not entangled. Then it seems like I would get the same thing.
Well,
the charges are the same. Look,
and it's
up is 3.
No, see, charges are the same.
Yeah.
But you know, in a billion quantum Hall states, you know, it's usually, you know, once you have fixed the charge, you know, and you say it's a billion, you know, you're sort of stuck with one universality class.
Yes, that's right. You need an entanglement so that you could get the...
Exactly. That's the thing. So, right. Now, I have only 20, not even 20 minutes left. So what I also wanted to show you, so the question has, you know, can this be stabilized? And I think I'm erasing the effective field theory here. I could also erase this one. You got all. Very dusty. So the question which has already been raised, is there a parent Hamiltonian which can stabilize it, and how would it look like? And this is sort of, there's a method, you know, I stumbled upon in the late 90s when I was doing numerical work on TJ ladders, and my students have also extensively used Vera for this system. And what it is, so we have this general method to find H. So, you know, we have some ground state psi naught, you know, like this state, which we can write out for a finite system. And the question is there a parent Hamiltonian of some form where I say, you know, it has L terms AI, this I has nothing to do with the index I here, HI, where HI is some term, you know, like for example, of course we would, like if it were a spin chain, it would be reasonable to assume, you know, HI equals sum over all sides alpha S alpha, S alpha plus I, so you know that would be, you know, we would have some, you know, we would have some going to small, and you know there would be I, it would be an not a, you know, it would be a Heisenberg interaction, but you know with neighbor for I equals 1, nearest neighbor for I equals 2, next nearest neighbor, and so on.
So the spin is spin 1/2 or spin 1?
It doesn't matter, you know, just very general. The method works for anything. I just wanted to illustrate a little bit, you know, what the ansatz here is. You have a finite, you want a Hamiltonian, and you know, you avail yourself of a finite number of terms. For spin 1/2, you know, this would be the only two-spin interaction you can write down, and if you have spin 1, you can square it, and also, you know, introduce some more coefficient. But this is in principle. And now I say, you know, okay, if this is an eigenstate, of course, if this is a parent Hamiltonian for this, it must be an eigenstate. If it must be an eigenstate...
Is it local Hamiltonian?
Well, that remains to be seen, you know.
But maybe just going to some... Most
let me go. Yeah. Let me go. You know, maybe all kind of things.
You don't put this restriction on your. There's no restriction to be local, right? No.
Right no. Now. Yeah. Right now, nothing at all. It says even less. So, I can write that H plus A naught psi naught equals 0, where this, of course, is to be interpreted as minus the energy. I say, you know, if this is a parent Hamiltonian, if it's an exact parent Hamiltonian, it should be an eigenstate. Right? Yeah. So the next thing is, I say, okay, you know, now I define my H naught equals to 1. This is just a nice way to write it. And then I can say 0 equals I equals 0 to L. Now, you know, I take this one, I absorb in another terms. That's why I called it A naught. AI HI psi naught. You know, this is basically just this equation rewritten with this definition. And you know, now I can write this. I define this to be H psi I you know, if I numerically have this state for a finite system, you know, and I have these terms in the Hamiltonian, see a spin chain, you know, for example, a spin 1/2 chain for 10 sides, and I have a Fuchs-Wilhelm wave function. You know, I can multiply these terms with a wave function. I get new wave functions, you know, some states psi I. This must be zero. And then I can multiply it with some psi j from the right. So I will have I equals zero to L AI psi j psi I. And, you know, this I can, for example, call matrix MJI. It's an Hermitian matrix. And, you know, if this Hermitian matrix now has zero eigenvalues, the eigenstates given by the AI will correspond to Hamiltonians for which this state is an exact eigenstate. I have, of course, it doesn't guarantee me that, you know, if I do that numerically, that I get the ground state. But, you know, for the Haldane-Shastri, and usually when I do that, what I get is I get some conserved quantity, because, for example, for a spin chain, I can write the total spin as a constant plus, you know, the term where all the AIs are the same, you know, where, you know, for spin chains, for example, S tot R squared equals, you know, 2 I small. Alpha smaller beta S alpha S beta plus constant. Right. So, you know, for example, this I would get as a solution, but, you know, so one has to be careful and sort out. You know, one might just be a conserved quantity. For the quantum Hall state on the sphere, you know, I get at where all the numerical work is done. I get a total angular momentum, which just means translational invariance. But if I get another one, and if I do it for the Goetz-Wilhelm wave function for 1/2 spin chain, I get the Haldane-Shastri model. You know, I would have discovered it if Haldane hadn't discovered it when I realized that. So, you know, this method, it doesn't guarantee that it's a ground state, but if there's an exact Hamiltonian, you stumble across it. And my experience is, you know, models like Haldane-Shastri you discover with this method. So it's extremely useful. But, Andre, one moment. But the most useful thing is, so eigenvalue lambda equals zero. So that means, you know, it's either conserved quantity, or it is a apparent Hamiltonian, an exact H apparent. But what in most system happens, and that's just an empirical thing, I get usually you get one eigenvalue lambda equals to, so lambda 1 equals to 0, and then you get lambda 2 equals 10 to the minus 4, and then lambda 3 and so on is, you know, the third is 1.2, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, so one eigenvalue turns out to be very, very small. And if you take this eigenvalue and take the corresponding eigenvector, then you get an optimized approximate Hamiltonian for the state you consider. So, you know, if you have a state like, for example, a 2/5 state in the quantum Hall effect, or, you know, and you look for an approximate Hamiltonian, and you don't have enough terms, you know, you cannot exactly find it with those terms. You usually find it by this method. And that's extremely useful. You see, and so that's all, you know, now I switch to transparencies, because, you know, here we have a wave function, and there are several subtleties about the pseudo potentials here. I can talk a little bit about it. Well, maybe a few, Martin,
yes. Your wave function, if I localize on a lattice, on every side, I will have 3 degrees of freedom. I can either have a Z particle omega, or I can have an empty side. So it looks like I have a three-dimensional
Didier, this is quantum Hall. We don't have a lattice.
Oh, you don't put a lattice, but here you have a lattice.
For the spin system, I put a lattice. Now, what I wanted to show you, just I have a finite number of terms. What I have is here pseudo potentials. And, let me, since the time I don't like to run very much over time, so, I'm switching gears and go to, let's see. So here, there's a way to switch on the projector. Maybe it does even work.
Martin, can I ask you a question before you put it down? You can keep it going down. Okay. I had a question. I think this is related to Jay's question, so maybe I missed the answer. But if you use, Haldane has this gapping criterion for when an edge state is gappable, using from the effective field theory. So it seems like this state, these edges could be gappable by some higher order backscattering process.
The thing is, if there's a non-local process, it can give backscattering. But usually, it happens on the edge, and to observe this statistics, it's not sufficient to take two quasi-holes close to each other and wrap them around it. You actually get zero. You need, it's a result for the thermodynamic limit. You need a significant a quantity of fluid in between where you go around, and you need, I think numerically you would probably need at least something like 3-4 electrons you encircle. So, that means, that the scale you're talking, where it could be seen is, is beyond a magnetic lens. And, this in a quantum Hall effect, it's fairly low density. So, the typical scatterer, I would say, is on a scale less. But in principle, you're right.
Yeah, okay. So it seems like there's some process that you could write on the edge, which I thought would be local, but maybe I'm not thinking of it right, by which you could gap the edge. But I agree, it wouldn't just be electron-electron. It would be some more complicated multi-electron process.
Yeah, it would, anything which is local, any non-local probe, would show that, could show the T violation, and then it's not gapped anymore. But there's always considerations of scale. The Earth's magnetic field breaks time reversal symmetry all the time. The experiments still give good results. So this is I'm not yet there to say anything practical. I'm just saying here's a concept and. And imagine, Laughlin had come up with his wave function before there was an experiment, just based on numeric and imagination. Would have been a great thing. Okay. Now, let me go. So here, this is all you have seen. I made these slices because, as far as I know, these things are on video, and then it's much, and my blackboard, you can hardly read it when you're in the audience. So when it's on video, I show you the slides quickly. So, if anyone watches the video, he can stop the video and look at the slides. And this is all stuff on the blackboard. There's effective field theory. There's a method. I explained that to you too. Now, what you do to do numerical work is, right? So you put it on a sphere, and on a sphere, lowest Landau level is just like a spin to a spin S, where 2S is the number of flux quanta going through the sphere. And then you introduce, Haldane introduced the spinor coordinates. The angular momentum is then written like that. And then a complete basis here is as these are complete basis states where m goes from minus s to plus s, and you know in the spaces there are all these rings on the sphere, and you know, and then you work in these spaces. Now here there's a little subtlety for those who are familiar with quantum Hall effect. The thing is, for the upspin layer where you have the magnetic monopole positive, or positive charge, the angular momentum points in the same direction as the state. So if you have a coherent state, you know, for example, angular momentum pointing here north, then it's a m equals s state where you just have, if m equals s, you just have the u. And you see, you know, it's a cosine of this angle theta. These are just the angles on the sphere theta from north to south, and this, you know, around the meridian, the phi. And but for the downspin layer, we have to modify the formula a little bit, and there's an important minus sign here. And that means that angular momentum is, that if the particle sits on the south pole, angular momentum is actually pointing to the north pole. Now, as a basis for relative, for the relative coordinates, or you know, or relative motion is relative angular angular momentum. So you know, here's the wave function. Here's the wave function we had on the blackboard written on the sphere. You write it in the spinor coordinates. You know, either you know it or you won't. You know, in these few minutes you won't pick it up. So then you parametrize any interaction by a set of pseudo potentials, which basically is you choose these, to get the pseudo potentials, you choose these coherent states where you have a state of two particles with total angular momentum J, and then you say, you know, what is not total angular momentum is relative moment, angular momentum, and you know, maybe I paint it on the other side. I have light, right? So you know, you have your sphere here, and you know, you have like angular momentum of one particle, L1 and L2. The magnitude is always fixed because of S1 and S2. Let's put it like this. The magnitude is always fixed by the strength of the monopole, which is the magnetic field going through the sphere. And then, you know, you go to a basis where you have some total angular momentum, which you may call J. Here, or what did I call it? No, I called it L, L1 plus, and I called it all L, so I should call it L here too. So that is the total angular momentum. And, you know, if they are totally aligned, the two particles, then this will be twice, you know, as the total angular momentum will be twice this angular momentum. But if it's less, then you know, it means basically you have one here and one is orbiting around, and you can identify that as relative angular momentum. So that you have within the layers, you have that within the layers, and you have it also interlayer. But interlayer, it's sort of tough because when the relative angular momentum zero is, then you know, they don't really sit on opposite sides on the sphere, because you know, you're then in a state where the whole state is rotationally invariant. Anyway, maybe these details are, maybe this is too much of details here. So you know, the way you write a two-body interaction in general, you know, you have these basis states here labeled by this m, which is just these states here. And now you the way you parametrize an interaction is you take two electrons out of m3 and m4. You conserve LC, the total angular momentum in Z direction, and then you change the basis via Clebsch-Gordan coefficients, you know, from this M1, M2 into a basis, or from M3, M4 into a basis where, you know, you have where the total angular momentum is a good quantum number, that would be k here, and that is 2s, like 2 times the total momentum minus the relative angular momentum. Then you assign it, then you take a pseudo potential number, that's the potential cost of this state, and then you use again Globsch-Gordan coefficients to put it back in. And you have to do that once for the. So, you know, you can, of course, then pull that out and pull this sum out, and you have just the sum over VL, HL. And that, of course, then is the same as we had, you know, on the blackboard here, which is dark now, you know, and as a tile Hamiltonian. Now, we have it here, of course, we have it for the up spins, for the downspins, and for the mixed terms. And the mixed terms, the interpretation is a little bit tough because, you know, you don't have this nice, I mean, you know, relative angular momentum doesn't mean, you know, a distance anymore. So it's a little bit more complicated. So let's see. So, and what this Hamiltonian finder method gives, it gives some pseudo potentials. You know, here for up and down, which don't look so bad, and something somewhat absurd looking for the mixed term. You know, you don't know what that really means. You know, it's just some curve, and this curve even, I mean, there are several constants you get. Namely, you can add a constant for all the upspins. You can add a constant for the downspins. You can add a constant for the mixed terms, and you can add total angular momentum. And total angular momentum, you know, it looks like this here. You know, it looks in terms of pseudo potentials, it looks more like a reasonable potential than what we got in the end. So this one we can subtract, and you know, it doesn't change the Hamiltonian. So, you know, now one can compare, if one takes these pseudo potentials gotten out of the numerical method, then one can compare the relative angular momentum resolved correlators and see, you know, are the correlators of the ground state of my model Hamiltonian the same as they are in the trial state. And you see here the crosses are the trial state and the dots are the exact state. So, you know, so it looks very, very weird here. But, you know, it's the same in the wave function as it is in the trial state as in the exact ground state of the model Hamiltonian. So that indicates the model Hamiltonian is not so bad. And to get a grasp on what it really means, we've transferred it back into a real space basis. You know, we have, since we're projecting this interaction onto the lowest Landau level, we have only a finite number of pseudo potentials. And that means, you know, when we look for a potential which, when projected, gives these pseudo potentials, you know, we choose some bases here, and there has to be as many basis potentials, of course, as pseudo potentials. And we've taken here these functions properly normalized, which look like that, which are basically also just, you know, rings, you know, around the North Pole. So, you know, this is theta equals, you know, this is for n equals 0, so it's just closest, and then it goes further away, and this is just on the opposite side. And, you know, one can then transfer and ask what kind of potential would give these crazy pseudo potentials I showed you. And what we get is that's the thing in real space. You know, this is what it is for up, up, and down, down. So very reasonable potentials, you know, not far away from what you need for a Laughlin state. And what you need interlayer, also it's totally local, you know, and totally you know, just looks alike, a little bit weak, about half as big you need it. And, you know, this is the potential, you know, which would be relevant to experiments. So in the end, you know, all what you need is, you know, a sort of quantum Hall-like potential like you need it for any quantum Hall set with an attraction between the layers. Now here, you know, when writing the reports, Oleg was reminding us, you know, we have this special event. I told Oleg about this work before, and he pointed out to me, yes, but you know, to have protected edge states, of course, your Hamiltonian must be time reversal invariant, which is absolutely right, and I had just completely forgotten in the heat of the work. So, you know, that is sort of one of my key events, what I've learned here. And yeah, this is, you know, I could flash a conclusion, but I'm already over time. So I would like to leave it as that and thank you for your attention.
Any further questions?
So, Martin, if you were to take these 3-1-1, the pseudo potentials to be exactly the same from up, up, and down, down.
Yeah.
Then wouldn't it be true that the Hamiltonian written in these coordinates would be globally time-reversal invariant?
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
So wouldn't that spoil the feature that you would like to have, which is the time-reversal is secretly broken, but you need to know local matching?
No, you know, then you know, it would be, the Hamiltonian has to be time-reversal invariant, and the ground state spontaneously breaks it.
Oh, I see. Okay, so the wave function you wrote,
yeah, but it is something I cannot realize in my finite system, because, you know, there are these shifts with the fluxes, and the number of flux for the up spins is actually, here it's 9 flux quanta, and for the down spins it's 11 flux quanta for six electrons in each layer. So, you know, the finite system, I write out the wave function, you know, there's a finite size effect violating T anyway. So, you know, so that's why, you know, in the numerical work, you know, there's no way to include that. And that's probably also why, you know, why we needed Oleg to point it out.
So spin here remains a good quantum number in terms of, like, does your effective Hamiltonian or fictitious Hamiltonian commute with the, I don't know, so the spin sigma t?
Yes. Well, because, you know, you have some electrons in the up spin and you have some electrons in the down spin. You know, and you...
So the Hamiltonian that you constructed this way actually has, you know, commutes with sigma z, right?
Yes. I mean, you know, I just put on a potential interaction between the layers.
Yeah, so what prevents you of writing your wave function on the lattice? And in this case, what would be the local Hilbert space I would describe?
Well, you know,
the Calmeier-Laughlin construction of the...
Okay, no, but look, I mean, you know, this is very different from Calmeier-Laughlin. I mean, you know, here what I do is quantum Hall physics, because I argue quantum Hall physics, you know, because as I argued in the beginning, I say, you know, a Chern insulator is just a quantum Hall state projected onto it. Now, Calmeier-Laughlin is something different, because there you say particles are upspins and holes are downspins. Here I say, you know, I have particles which are...
I can do some identification in the same way. You know, I can say I have Z particle or I don't have Z particle. I have omega and each would be a particle. I mean, I can make identification to spin to a local spin Hilbert space.
No, but, you know, then, well, if you make that up, set identification for the up spins, you know, for the C layers, you know, you can say, okay, I have it on a lattice, my C are up spins, and, you know, where there's no C, there's a down spin. But then you don't need the W at all.
No, but you can have a larger Hilbert space describing how your spin states or whatever.
Probably. You know, haven't thought about, you know, of course, you know, so you're basically saying, look, you have a new, every quantum Hall state which has been there so far has given rise to an interesting spin liquid. You know, like, for example, the Laughlin state to the Calmeier-Laughlin, the Pfaffian to the one Ronnie and I proposed, the non-abelian and generalizations,
right,
and so on. So you say you have a new quantum Hall state, where's your spin model? Good question. Yeah, you know, maybe there is one. Yeah, no, there must be one. I just haven't explored this direction, but good point. Very good point.
Great. So what else? last thing, Martin, for the next talk.